हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 7. Kapila Dev to Devahuti, Srimad Bhagavatam 3, chapter 25. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intensive practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. Right? Because karma and yan, they're paths of elevation, but they won't give you the final perfection. Right? They only give you the heavenly planets or liberation. They can't take you beyond. Even though they'll elevate, but they can only elevate up to a particular point. Right, so that'll be the commonality between the three, yeah, is that they are going the same. Just like, let's say, you're going from here to Krishnagar, right? One path takes from here to Ranagat, the other one takes from here to Calcutta. Right? So now, this is the important thing to appreciate, is that the road, the path to Calcutta already includes Krishnagar and Ranagat.
Yes.
That has to be appreciated. But what happens is we think, no, unless you separately endeavor for Krishnagar, you won't get it. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm going to Calcutta, I won't get to Krishnagar by that method. I have to separately go to Krishnagar. You understand? So I'll take a car, go to Krishnagar, and then I'll try to, you know, get on, you know, whatever's going, then go to the next. Does that make sense? Yes.
All right, so what defines where we want to go? Is it a purva samskara? So why people want to go different destinations?
Just because of their attachment, their desire. That's all. So as long as they think that there is something of value in the material world, then they'll stay within that. When they think that there's nothing within the material world, they just want to get out of the material world, then they'll go for the liberation. But if they understand that, no, you have to solve the problem, you actually have to take up bhakti and develop your relationship with the Lord. Then they'll do that. So it just depends upon the interest of the living entity. That's why it's said it's so rare that someone actually takes up the devotional path. Right? So if you see so many, that's because of the nature of Lord Chaitanya's mission. So his mercy. Then you see, you know, how Rupa Goswami is given, and then specifically the founder Acharya. Because then he takes it and makes it, you know, appear to be something very, easily accessible. Because he's made it that way. Does that make sense? Like that. Otherwise, you don't see that volume. Right? When Lord Chaitanya is present, then you see like that. When the Acharyas come, it comes up like this. But the founder makes it that it's universally applicable. So it's a very special thing. So it's rare out of all the living entities in the universe, because you have to count all the, you know, how you say, all the moving and non-moving living entities. So you take the non-moving, how many are there, right? And then you take on top that, you start with the moving, the ants or this or that. You know, it's like there's unlimited living entities. Yes.
Maharaj, there are different types of liberation. That's when people think, oh, I'm going towards liberation. They have this concept or this idea that I'm, I'm never going to take birth again. But actually, liberation is a byproduct of jnana. People are not educated; they don't receive the right knowledge, and they are taught to believe liberation means that's it, never again.
Yes, because that's what they want to hear, also. Because otherwise, they might inquire, what's beyond that, or what does that mean, or what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you're inside the house. All the relatives are there. It's totally insane, and you're freaking out. So you leave the house and stand out on the front porch. That's liberation.
If nothing happens at the front porch.
That's another thing, but we're just saying you're out there. But now what do? So for a few minutes, you'll appreciate the liberation. But then after, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, then now you want to do something.
Go back.
So that means then you'll end up going back inside. So that's the problem. So only when you have another destination to go to, then you can get away. That's the problem. Because the Sayujya, which was generally thought of as liberation, that will bring you back, guaranteed. Right? They say, coming back guaranteed. But the other four, those you won't come back. Because they're in connection with the Lord. But then the devotees of Braj, they're not even interested in that. They're just interested in serving Krishna. So it's not so much getting out of the material world that's the impetus. It's the pleasing Krishna. So in the beginning, we may start there, but we're always associating with that understanding of it's about pleasing Krishna. And it's not about these things. And so in the beginning, we may appreciate these things. So we follow Varnashram because of the fruit of gains that are there, the social, the economic context that's there, the maintenance and all these things that are there. But with time we start to see that it's all about Krishna, controlled by Krishna. And then getting out of the material, but it's only because you're absorbed in Krishna. So getting out of the material has a limited experience. But being absorbed in Krishna, that doesn't. You know what I'm saying? The taste of that means the personal taste of unlimited is better than the impersonal taste of unlimited. Because the one's boring because it only addresses the sat aspect of the soul. Very minimal on the chit. And no ananda. They say brahmananda, but it's not. It's just being there in a neutral state, so it seems to work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's that they're not interested in more, so that's all they hear. So therefore then Krishna arranges. See, when someone asks, someone wants to know something, Krishna arranges. He's the super soul. So he arranges. But if they're not actually interested in the supreme absolute truth, then the problem comes is they don't get there. Because super soul knows what your intent is. He knows and so he'll only bring you that much. So then you'll hear from some philosopher, yogi, or some variety of thing that has some aspect. They'll talk about these things, and it may be inspiring. So that you'll follow the path of this path of elevation, but you're not interested in going beyond what is being offered. So it's a problem. But if you want to know, Krishna will put you in contact. But it's still up to you what you do with it. You'll bump into the devotees. Now, whether you take advantage of that or not, then that's another thing. Is that, Like one devotee was just telling me today, is that when he came in contact with Krishna consciousness, then the person they're with, then when they saw that it looks like it's a serious thing, then it came down to it's either Krishna or me. And so then, because they were telling me the story today, then it was Krishna. Yeah. So they both came in contact, but one took it up and became a devotee, and the other one wasn't interested. Is that? Oh, yeah. So it's just individual choice, individual taste. Yeah.
I think it's difficult to compete with Krishna anyway.
Yeah, no, it is. It's I mean, it didn't work out with that. It didn't work out with Prabhupada and his wife. Yeah, so had the option, but she took the tea.
So the paths of karma and jnana are authorized in the sense, the karma restricts the sense enjoyment.
Yes.
To such an extent that where we can focus on something higher.
Yes.
Jnana also similarly.
You understand you're the soul.
Yes.
In the workings, the mechanics of the material world.
Basically, these two paths, though are authorized, they can bring only one up till a certain level, where from there...
Yes, so if you take them without the bhakti and follow them nicely, they'll bring you to the next. From karma, you will come to jnana. From karma, it will bring you to the point where is the opposite. Means if you're interested in what's beyond that, then you'll come in contact with bhakti. Right? But the point is that... So, because from karma, you'll get detachment. Right? And from jnana, you'll get the knowledge or self-realization. But those come as a natural side effect of bhakti.
Yes, yes.
So just by practicing bhakti, you'll get the effect anyway. So that's the fun part, is the devotees are getting the effect of following karma even though they don't do all the rituals.
Mm-hmm.
They get the effect of jnana even though they don't sit and study the shastras all day.
And also... Like, you know, the highest authorities in karma or jnana are generally considered the devotees. Like,
yeah.
Like in Bhagavad Gita, it's quoted, Janaka Maharaj performs his duties perfectly.
Yes.
Jnana, everyone knows as Narada Muni.
Yeah. So that's because the point is when they're performing bhakti, you will see the perfection of these other duties already included. So even though the great kings. They're performing the duties as kings because they're great devotees, then the kingly duties go perfectly. That's why they're mentioned.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Otherwise, they would just be another name in the list.
Yes.
Right? But the point is they're able to engage their position as a king in Krishna's service, therefore it's worth hearing about them. So... Okay, Suta Goswami Dishonaka Rishi, Srimad Bhagavatam 1, Chapter 2. The supreme occupation, Dharma, for all humanity, is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service under the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. Right, so if there's a motive in karma and jnana, it won't satisfy the self, because the self's beyond karma and jnana. And if it's interrupted, sometimes you don't, it won't be satisfying to the soul. Because the soul is eternal, therefore eternally functioning in an unmotivated way for serving the Lord, that will satisfy the soul. Right? All other things won't. We engage them as long as we think they do. But if we engage them according to regulation, then with time we'll figure out they don't. Right? So, yeah. By rendering service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Right? So the benefits of karma and jnana are already gained. The occupational means causeless means there's no material cause. The cause is bhakti. Right? But there's no material cause. So you don't see them studying the books they know. You don't see them performing all the technical karmas, but they're piously situated. They're getting all those facilities. Yeah. The occupational duties a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain, right? So ultimate liberation, you're performing the occupational duty, it should bring you to the platform of liberation or jnana, which then should bring you to the platform of bhakti. So for the devotees, they don't have to go through these slow paths of, you know, so many lifetimes of karma, so many lifetimes of jnana, then finally get to bhakti. They're performing this within, so they're, as given in the Gita, the yoga ladder. So in the beginning, you're practicing devotional service, but the central aspect will be karma. So you'll be performing karma yoga connected to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? Then with time, knowledge and detachment will come, jnana yoga will become prominent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But with time, then it just becomes pure bhakti. Does that make sense? All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. It says never. It doesn't say not only for. So in case you come across that in the translation, that's not Prabhupada. Right? Should never be performed for material gain. You perform your occupational duty because you're supposed to do that, and you're doing that to please the Lord. Naturally, because you're doing that, you'll get results. Those results will maintain you. Does that make sense? Yes. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So it means material gain does come by occupational engagements, but they're not used for sense gratification. It's used to as service to the Lord. Right? So you're cooking, offering to the Lord, you're doing everything in connection with the Lord. So the senses are being maintained. Right? And you go to the temple, you dress nicely. Right? Therefore you have nice clothes. Right? But otherwise, then you have nice clothes because you want nice clothes. It has nothing to do with Krishna. So then that's cultivating sense gratification. But it's a matter of dressing nicely for Krishna, and depending upon your nature, then that has more or less volume of things, what it requires. Right? So you're taking the nature, connecting it to Krishna. It's being taken care of automatically. So the devotion includes that. Devotional service includes the maintenance of the body. Does that make sense? Because if self-realization, then you're doing that from all these levels, right? It means the physical atma, then the mental atma, the intellectual atma, you're engaging that, body, mind, and words, in the Lord's service. Right? But the ultimate point is you're trying to cultivate that highest aspect of atma, the soul. So the lower three are in service too. So the lower three are taken care of by the whole karma and jnana, by the varnashram system. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But they're only as servants to bhakti. Right? Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. Since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth, nothing else should be the goal of one's work. Right? One can say, no, but if everybody did that, nothing would happen, right? That, you all get that one? You know, I got that one from my mom. So, right? But the point is in Satya Yuga, they're all Paramahamsas doing just this. It went on perfectly fine. Yes.
We heard that, you know, it sounds like really boring, this kind of, you know, verse.
Yeah. Sounds boring.
Yeah.
So misery is enlivening.
At least it's some spice, you know.
Like,
otherwise, it's really boring.
Really boring. So then,
that was the argument.
That's the argument. So then, if we want to take that, then see, the thing is this is the fun part. Is they're saying, oh, this restriction is boring, but they're restricting themselves.
It's not boring for them.
Yes, yeah, boring for them, but they're still restricting their own life. Why are they always going back to the same house? You know, wouldn't it be, but that's boring. It's the same thing every day. Yes. Yes, but I'm saying it's boring. It's the same thing. You know, it means like you have the guy, like, was it Jack Kerouac? Was that his name?
Yes.
You know, he's just out on the road. You know, he's just going like that. But the other one costs you nothing. You just go out, anything to moving, you hop on it, you move with it, you sit there, you hang out with the guys, you do this and that, you move around. It's like...
That's bata.
Huh?
That's super bata. I mean, you get everywhere.
But the point is, it's like this. The life that you're talking about here, of just going home, there's no book written on it. But Jack Kerouac, that people follow that as a lifestyle, it's a whole thing, it's a cult. You know what I'm saying? So the point is what my point being is that they're saying it's boring means it's boring for them, not that it's inherently boring, because otherwise their life is boring as, you know, you fill in the blanks. You understand? It's just downright boring. So unless it's Krishna conscious, unless you're following the Vedic things, because no one from the Vedic culture would say it's boring. They would say, why should I go that far? So someone below the Vedic culture would say it's boring. So therefore, then, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Karmis will never say, because they know the more strictly you follow, the better facility you get. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is they're doing these things because it's steady. But nothing's more steady than the Vedic system. So it's already included. If you're attached to material things, the Vedic system already includes attachment.
That's very good. It's not boring. Who is it boring for?
The point is that he's mentioning that sometimes devotees say this. Grihasthas will say that. It's boring like this and that. It's the same thing. But it's like they're going home to the same house. They're wearing the same clothes. They're eating the same food.
It's being very good. I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So the point is that the stableness is what's there. It's just a matter of what mode you want your stableness in. So here it's recommended it's in pure goodness. Yeah, in pure goodness. Yeah, it's steady. But the point is, mode of goodness, that'll be the material steady.
It brings all the spiritual enlightenment also.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's really good.
Huh?
It's good to be steady.
Yes, it's good. It's good. A devotional service is considered to be advanced when it is steady.
Yeah, I think it's very good when it is steady.
Yes, yes.
It's not good.
No, but for others, they'll take it as boring. It's the modes of nature.
For them.
Just accept it. Okay. If someone's in the mode of passion or ignorance, the mode of goodness is boring.
Okay.
That's all. And someone who's attached to goodness, then pure goodness is, they find it too a little too wild. Yes, yes. The seriously inquisitive student or sage, well equipped with knowledge and detachment, realizes that absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. Right, so Vedanta means the end of knowledge, so that means devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Vedanta means bhakti.
Yes.
That's the actual. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation, according to caste divisions and orders of life, is to please the personality of Godhead. It's not boring, is it?
I gotta perform my duty.
Okay, yes, yes, yes. Kapila Dev to Devahuti, Canto 3, Chapter 25.
When it mentions over here, it began with intensive practice of devotional service, and then it speaks about performing the prescribed duties. So, is it aiming at that, performing the prescribed duties is an intensive practice of devotional service itself aimed towards Krishna? Can we see that?
No, the occupational duties, only if they're seen in connection with Krishna, do they become part of the devotional process.
Yes.
Otherwise, if they're not, then they're just pious.
And how do we define intensive practice of devotional service in the context of Varanashram?
Unmotivated, uninterrupted. Right? So it's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Kapila Dev to Devahuti, Canto 3, Chapter 25. Lord Kapila Dev said, "The senses are symbolic representations of the demigods, and their natural inclination is to work under the direction of the Vedic injunctions." Right? Because the senses work best that way. Well, why that? Because the senses work under the mind. The minds manifest from the mode of goodness. The demigods are also manifest from the mode of goodness. So the mind following the directions of the scriptures, you know, to establish one in goodness is the natural inclination of the senses. Right? Now, the natural inclination of the soul is pure goodness. So that's why then that situation of goodness is connected to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But anything less than that then is not on the demigod level.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we know we have the suras, and then we have those who are not suras.
Yes.
Okay. As the senses are representatives of the demigods, so the mind is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. When that service spirit is engaged in the devotional service of the Personality of Godhead, without any motive, that is far better even than salvation. Right? Because the senses are there, they're controlled by the mind. Right? Just like the demigods, they're controlled by the Supreme Lord. So when the mind controls the senses in line with the directions as given, right? So in other words, the senses are engaged according to the position of the demigods in the mode of goodness. But the mind is absorbed in pure goodness. Right? So the external activities are goodness. The mind is in pure goodness, connected to the Lord. Then that is actually the situation that you're looking for. And that is better than, it says far better, even than salvation. So that means even than salvation means it already includes karma. Karma doesn't even figure in the conversation. Because here you're engaged in the sense, you're engaged in the Lord's service, so it's complete for the living entity. Well, the activities of karma engaging the body and senses, but not the soul. The jnana, you're engaging the soul, but not the body and senses. And neither of them are connected to the Lord. But when you're dealing with the Lord, then the body, mind, and words, and the soul are connected to the Lord. So it's complete. So it's far better. Okay? Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate endeavor. Just as fire in the stomach digests all we eat. Right? We don't have to make separate endeavor and digest. You know, the guy's sitting there going some things with his stomach and saying, you know, what are you doing? I'm digesting. Yeah, you don't have to do that.
Right? Meditation.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Meditating. What are you meditating on? Digesting. Yeah. Kapila Dev Devahuti 329. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart, just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down to the ocean. Such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So there's nothing that can interrupt it. Right? So that's the unadulterated devotional service. Otherwise, then, sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, depending upon the situation we're in. So the condition, so that means we're conditional. Right? Unconditioned means it doesn't matter what condition we're in, we're always absorbed in the Lord. Is that? Yeah. So that's the fun part, is we're from a conditioned state, we're talking about the universal, right? That a certain material situation is universal.
Yes.
No, it's conditional. Mm. Right? I mean, have you ever tried to wear flip-flops, cargo shorts, and a t-shirt in, like, Northern Europe?
No.
So it's not universal. We're sorry.
But if somebody is the center of the universe, whatever is around them, it's universal.
Ah, that's okay. There, now we have an explanation. If you're the center of the universe, whatever's around you is universal. Yeah, it works. It works, yeah.
Which grammar?
Huh?
Which grammar?
What?
Which grammar? Narayan.
Which grammar? Oh, which grammar?
Narayan. Moni.
No, I think this is the Yiddish cup grammar. Yeah, so that means it's just natural. There's an opportunity, like, you just take it. If you have to think about it, means it hasn't come to the point of unadulterated. But if you think about it and you get involved in the devotion, then that's good. That's vaidhi. But when you hear about it and the opportunity, but you don't take it, then that's a little bit less. Right? Sukadev Goswami Damaras, Prickett 2-3. The transcendental knowledge in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment. And being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? Right? Just, it's so nice. The opportunities, what is gained is so great. Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. Right? Because if you're always absorbed in Krishna, then the setting and rising of the sun doesn't affect your position in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because this life ends, you just continue on in Krishna consciousness. But for the materialist, the sun goes up and goes down. It's one more day lost in this body. And then that body will be finished, and they have to go and start a new body, and then the whole thing starts all over again. So whatever they've learned, they start from zero. Right? They have to build up again. But in devotional service, it doesn't. It just continues. There's no...
It's like computers. Some computers, they crash, and you start from scratch. But some, they're smart. They save all the data.
Yes.
And you start from there.
Yes. 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 Exactly. Yes. See? That particular grammar. Myers Pariket to Sukadev Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam 2, Chapter 8. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, manifested in their hearts within a short time. Now here's your question. How short?
My question, why is this Abhideya?
Why is it? Because it's showing the glory of devotional service. I mean, it's just by you hear Bhagavatam, then you'll gain the Lord within the heart. You'll gain that attraction to the Lord. You'll gain the Lord's interest in the devotee. All these things. All you see is it's still being compared to the material, which you don't really get. I think also according to that grammar, it's called bupkis. You don't get a whole heck of a lot. Yeah. No. Yes.
This chapter
now, according to Jiva Goswami.
This chapter is named Analysis of the Process. Means it's like within the Abhidaya is the Sambandha.
Yes, yes. Because see, the point of Sambandha, which sometimes is confusing, is Sambandha. Oh, those guys aren't here. Sambandha Gyan means it's the knowledge of that and knowledge of the position of the Abhideya and Prayojana. It's not the endeavor application of Abhideya and gaining of Prayojana, but it's the knowledge about. So all that's within Sambandha. When that's there and one accepts it, then one can start Abhideya. But if one hasn't accepted it, then the process doesn't really start very well. It means you're doing devotional service, of course. You're engaged. But it's not that body, mind, and words are engaged. Right? The body's engaged, so you'll always get benefit. That's the perfection of devotional service, is it always works. But then when you accept it, and you accept that devotional service is the only thing that gives any real benefit, everything else doesn't. Then at that time you see the devotional service becomes dynamic, because then once it comes to the steadiness, that's the beginning of advanced devotional service. That's how you tell the difference. Right? Because the other is unsteady. It's anishta bhakti. Because of material desire, you get distracted. But when you're convinced that only devotional service can fulfill all desire, it's the only thing that needs to be done, then you don't have to endeavor for anything else separately. So that means you give up the anartas. So that naturally situates you in nishta. You know what I'm saying? So it's just there. Because we see is when Prabhupada mentions 75%. We're talking about that, you would say nishta proper. Right, because you have the beginning stages and you have the end. It's just like in astrology. You have the house that's there. It's 30 degrees. Right? The house or the constellation. It's 30 degrees. But the middle, I think 15 degrees is considered the actual full house. Right? And the last 7.5 and the beginning seven and a half, they're connected with the house that it's next to.
Cusp.
Yes. So then this overlap. So that 15 degrees, that's the overlap, they'll have a similar flavor. One will be more this house, the other seven and a half will be more that house. But then when you get into the middle, that's considered fully. Does that make sense? So that you'll have that also in the process. So that beginning part will still have some flavor of anartha nivriti. Right? Because when you get to 60%, you would call it nishta. But it still has that flavor. But when it comes to 75%, then you'll say, now they're steady. It's obvious that they're steady. Other times it'll be they're steady, and then sometimes they're not, and they're steady. So it'll be predominantly steady, but sometimes not. The other one, you'll just see it's basically regular. Very minimal. You know? And then if you continue that, that will then start to gradually give taste. You know, so you start to get that, it'll be the steady, and then there'll be the beginning stages of taste, then there'll be the solids taste, then they'll start to develop attachment. Right? Become attachment, start to develop bhava, then become bhava, start to develop prema, then become prema. Right? So that's why it always talks on that point of steadiness. Below that it mentions what to do, but it only talks seriously about the process from steady. Because from there everything else happens. Does that make sense? So that's why it's mentioned. Just like when we're talking in the performance of the levels of consciousness, everything's geared towards the manamoya as just a basic theistic religion. You know, theistic moralism is just the basic, because that's where human life starts. Below that, it's human form, but it's not human life. Because it's still you're in the human form but practicing animal life. But when it gets to theistic moralism, in other words, the morality is based on scripture and on pleasing Krishna, not on I made it up or my people made it up, or you know what I'm saying? Like that. It's coming down in authority. Right? Acceptance of authority, having that respect, having that sense of duty. That, you know, the aspect of goodness, because from there, then the whole process will work. Does that make sense? So the whole thing works from that position. So we'll see as the aspects, as the bhakti, then it becomes stable. And so that goes dynamically. And then on the social economic, now you're situated in goodness, that also becomes stable, and that develops very nicely. So from that position, everything's gained. You know what I'm saying? So we can't doubt that this focused devotional service is important. We can't doubt that the Vedic system, or the Varnashram in this context, is not going to take care of all the maintenance. You want money, you want security, you want stability. It's Varnashram. Nothing else will give it. There isn't anything else. Right? It just doesn't exist. Where is it? That's the whole problem. Does that make sense? Yeah. We're good? Not so good? Yes.
If there is no Varnashram system, how can an individual can?
The individual, just by being absorbed in devotional service and doing the best, it'll work. It's just, the point is if you don't use Varnashram, it just means your social, economic, you know, elements aren't going to work very good. That's all. That it'll just be weak. Doesn't mean you can't be a devotee. It just means that, you know, it'll be a devotee on a roller coaster. It means you can remember Krishna on a roller coaster, but doesn't mean that you won't be, you know, vomiting and yelling and screaming. You know. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It's just because Krishna wants it to go smoothly, then that's what he does. Because we have to remember is that Krishna, for him, the most pleasing is his human pastimes. That's what he does in Braj. It's exclusively human. While in Mathura, then you see it's human with a touch of being God. It's predominantly human, but it has that element of being God in it. And when you get to Vaikuntha, it's just his God, being God. So humans follow Varnashram. You know, Varnashram is for the humans. Like all these rules, like when Arjuna went up to the heavenly planets and all that, then he's pointing out to, I think it was Urvasi, wasn't it, that you know, that he was looking at her with great enthusiasm because he's seeing here she's the, you know, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of, you know, their whole dynasty. You know, here he's meeting in person, you know, that like that. So he was very enthusiastic. And so, therefore, you know, he has a relationship with her as his mother, like that. And she pointed out, you know, we're from the heavenly planets. We don't work on those rules. You know? They don't have, amongst themselves, but with the human stuff, they don't work with that because it's like they're always in their position. You know, humans have their time, so therefore it looks like she's a great, 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 great grandmother. But, you know, probably, you know what I'm saying? Someone who looks 16 years old and has been like that for the last, you know, 100,000 years or something like that, it's probably not going to be appreciate being called grandma. Even though she's way beyond grandma, you know. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that there's different depending on where you are in the universe that applies. So Varna applies for humans, but it's only as a support to human pastimes. This means serving Krishna. But we take Varnashram as important on its own. We're simply looking at it as the social system, as the economic system, as all these things. Then it's a problem. Then it becomes a distraction. You know, then it's Niyamagraha. That the one, they come in, they have no rules, right? Non-theistic morality. They come in contact with theistic morality, they won't accept it. Because they don't see the point. Right? So they won't move up to the next level. And those who accept the theistic morality, but they won't move beyond to, it's just an application within devotional service alone. That's also then not moving to the next platform, because Niyamagraha. So they both have the same problem, they're just that they happen to be situated at two different levels. Yes?
In the Braj pastime, the human pastime, there is elements of Varnashram.
Yes.
Actually, there's no rules because it's so spontaneous.
Yes, but the point is the natural spontaneity in serving Krishna in that human mood. That's your basis of Varnashram. You know what I'm saying? So the point is when we call it Varnashram, means it has a set of rules because you're supposed to do it like this. Right? You know, just like Mother Jashoda spontaneously does things for Krishna. Right? But you know, in the contemporary society, you might have to tell a mother that she actually has to spend time with her kid or do things for a child. You know, it's not just like, you know, something that when you want, you know, you use it, you know, like, and when you don't, then it should take care of itself. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is you have to explain these things. You have to explain the relationships, because there it's just natural. You know, because of their attraction to Krishna, then Krishna's gopis, they're in a conjugal rasa with him, but a friendship rasa with Balaram. And Balaram's gopis, they're in a conjugal rasa with Balaram and a friendship rasa with Krishna. It's natural, it's spontaneous. But in the material world, you have to set the rules. Does that make sense? He always respects his parents. So here, but you have to tell them you have to respect your parents. So that's why then it takes on this as Varnashram. But there is just the natural way, the spontaneous way that Krishna and the residents of Braj interact with each other. Right? That becomes the basis for then the culture and all the other realms. You know, from there down to Mathura, from there down to Vaikuntha, from there into the material world. But that's where it's from. So for us, we follow Varnashram because that's just the natural system. But it's not about the system, it's about devotional service. You know, it's just like you're going to, let's say, fry something. You know, let's say some grated potatoes. So they have a tendency to stick. So you use a particular pan that just doesn't stick. Right? And so then, that's what you do, but it's about cooking the potatoes, it's not about the pan. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is we get distracted and think it's about the pan. No, it's about the potatoes. You can say, well, without this pan, the potatoes won't cook. Yeah, but it's still about the potatoes. So the discussion is about the potatoes, not the pan. Otherwise, they're talking about the pan, and it doesn't. How will they cook the potatoes nicely? You know, they have to be focusing on the potatoes, but you've chosen the right pan. So that's the thing. The primary and secondary are intimately connected, but you have to know which one is primary and which one is secondary. That's the point. Because the primary, pleasing Krishna, is permanent. The secondary of doing it through cooking for Krishna or singing for Krishna, these are, you know, seemingly the secondary, the temporary. Because now you're singing, now you're dancing, now you're cooking, now you're doing something else. But that consistent love for Krishna, that's why it's called Stai Bhava. It's fixed. So that rati of attraction is fixed. Then the aspects of meditating on Krishna and doing this service or that service or this activity or engaging the body, the mind, or work. These are the things that seem that are constantly adjusting the transformations of the internal potency. You know what I'm saying? So that's where we get the reflection of that comes into the material world. The problem is when it comes to the material world, it's all secondary. But within, because you can see the cause and the effect, we can point out what's primary and secondary within the secondary. Mm-hmm. And you can take the secondary of the secondary and point out what's primary of that out of the secondary of secondary. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always do that. Because it's based on Krishna, so it has his nature in it. Does that make sense? So generally what comes up is the confusion on that we get used to the word means a specific thing when the word is actually a concept. Because that's where it starts. It's a concept in the mind, in nod. Then from there it takes on the form of the word until it comes out the throat and then we say it as a word. But that word only came out because of what you're thinking. You know, it's just like when you're in a very delicate situation where you have to each word or each syllable think, then you have to catch a mood. Otherwise you just speak. But then you have to catch moods, and then catching that mood, then you start to use words that match. Does that make sense? You know, and then if you practice that, then that becomes a regular standard thing. You can discuss it in a very natural way. But you're can be very, very careful about that a certain mood is there. So the words are there, but they're secondary to supporting that particular mood or that effect you want. Is that? Yeah. Okay. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, i.e. Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of the self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankering. Thus, it acts like autumnal rains upon pools of muddy water. Right? Because from the rainy season, you get so much, the water's kind of muddy. Because there's constant, this little bit, and it doesn't like that. But the autumnal rains, and they're very heavy. Not so often, and very heavy. And so they just clear everything. Everything gets washed, everything becomes fresh and nice. That's the uniqueness of that season. Sukadeva Goswami 2, Maharaj Parikit, Srimad Bhagavatam 2, Chapter 1. The saintly king Katvanga, after being informed that the duration of his life would be only a moment more, at once freed himself from all material activities and took shelter of the supreme safety, the personality of Godhead. What is the value of a prolonged life which is wasted, inexperienced by years in this world? Better a moment of consciousness, because that gives one a start in searching after his supreme interest. Right? So in the Vedas, this is what's counted as mature or immature. It means age is respected, of course, but that's not the actual basis. The basis is that this of whether there's full consciousness or not.
Yes.
That's the actual thing. Yes.
Generally, age is respected because people are expected to perform their duties according to, I mean, over a progress of, so actually that means like as a person having more age means he has performed all the duties that gives the respect for the age.
Yes, he's performed the duties. Also, it's just that when it comes to the knowledge and skill of that occupation or knowledge and skill of the ashrams, they'll have generally more. Generally. So, but people aren't mature enough to tell the difference between who has and who doesn't. So you just make a rule. You respect anybody who is older. You know, just like you respect anybody who has money or anybody who has an influence or anybody who has knowledge. You just respect them. Then within that, there's finer degrees. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have. And then you also have the aspect of the age as that when you get to 90, somehow or another, they have a view on life that they're not really attached. Because up to 90, you know, it's like, you may think, okay, I'll live a little more. But at 90, you know you're not living anymore. Even though you might live another 10 years. You know, it's finished. You can't do all the things, this and that. You can't. So, therefore, that knowledge there takes up. But the other one is you've done the act. You have the experience. And there'll be some detachment. That's vanaprastha. But it won't be as detached as 90. So, therefore, it doesn't matter who they are. What varna. If they're 90 years old, they're always respected. Even a Shudra, at night, you always respect them. Because whatever they'll say will be very, you know, generally very practical. Because, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's like grandparents. You know, they're not your kid. They're grandchild. They're not your kid. So they can tell them straight. If you do this, this will happen. But to your own children, you can't tell that. You know, there's the emotions and the feelings. Oh, but they should understand. Why don't they know? Why don't that? I said it before, you know, like 2 years ago. Why don't they understand? You know, all that kind of stuff. But the grandparents just say, you do this, this will happen. You don't do this, that'll happen. You know, like, what do I care? I'm seeing you for this hour. I'm going home. It's your life. And so, therefore, you get more. So when they hit that 90, it's even has more of that. You know what I'm saying? You'll have a mellowness and like that. So it's just, it has that, it's Krishna's arrangement. He's arranging this thing. Because then it creates fun, it creates rasa. Because otherwise, if everybody's exactly the same, where's the rasa? You know, there has to be variety, there has to be. That's why there's transformation of energy. There's then all that variety is there.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.